Welcome to the Jonah Carey Podcast, friends. Thanks for tuning in. I love you all. You're great. Hey, today's guest is Ryan Spilborg, Spilly, as he's known to friends. He is a color commentator for AT&T Sportsnet Rocky Mountain. He's the color commentator for Rockies games. And he also appears on SiriusXM's MLB Network Radio as a commentator in that form. And was a pretty darn good major league player. Played for the Colorado Rockies, among others. Also played in Japan for a little bit. And man, what a great conversation. He came to my house, which I always appreciate. And we got into all the stuff. The Joe Morgan letter sent to the BBWA about PEDs and guys who should be admitted to the Hall of Fame. Spilly and I talked about that. We talked about minor league union, the possibility of that. That's a really big issue for me. I am a union supporter in many respects in many different industries, but certainly in sports, management will trample all over you if you don't have representation of some kind. Certainly that's the case in baseball. Certainly that's the case with the minor leagues. So we got into that. And a whole bunch of other topics. The mortality of being a ball player. What it's like in the clubhouse. All of those good things, along with some Vin Scully stories, too. Spilly's really great. Smart. All that good stuff. Follow him on Twitter. I got to get his Twitter handle because I'm no longer on Twitter, but I will tell you in 1 second as I'm doing this. You can see that this show is extremely seat of the pants. No, not at all. Ryan Spilborg's on Twitter is SpillyGoat19, SpillyGoat19. You can follow him. You cannot follow me anymore on Twitter because I'm out, but you can check out Spilly there. And by the way, if you have lost touch with me or whatever and wanted to get with me on social media in some form, as I said, I'm not doing that anymore because of the time involved and wanting to focus on other stuff and family and work and all that. Just hit me up on my website. Go to jonahcarey.com and you can contact me through there, and I'll be happy to answer you, whatever's up and all that good stuff. And I appreciate your support on this forum and every other. And you can also follow me, my stuff at CBS Sports. I've got a column coming out soon about the Hall of Fame. Every year I pick the guys that I believe should be in the Hall of Fame on the current ballot, and I also get into the Joe Morgan letter and some reactions to it and all that good stuff. So check all that out, and check out this edition of the Jonah Carey Podcast with Ryan Spilborg. It's a good one. We are literally recording right now. Ryan Spilborg is in my house.
I like this place.
Thank you. How are you?
I'm doing great. I feel like it's so weird when we get into the off season.
Yeah.
Because being like a TV baseball broadcaster, it goes from, you know, like there's a time that I talked to an NFL guy, mm-hmm. and he goes, "How do baseball players get paid?" And I go, "Well, we get like
checks
we
115, get
we,
right?
Yeah, we get checks throughout every 2 weeks."
Yeah.
He was like, "No matter what." I was like, "Yeah, that's the beauty of guaranteed contract is that we get paid, you know, no matter what throughout the year." He goes, "What? You don't get paid after every game? Because that's how NFL guys get paid."
Yeah.
Did you know that?
No.
So Mondays or Tuesdays, if you were on the roster, an NFL guy gets paid. He gets his money after playing a game.
Wow.
So it's the same. Now I feel like I'm in the same kind of NFL type player mentality because with TV broadcast, I only get paid if I'm on television.
Oh, so you're a contractor, you're not a salary.
Yeah, I'm an independent contractor. Yeah, yeah. So now, as soon as we get to October, I feel like the squirrel in winter that either saved up a whole bunch of nuts so I can make it to March, or I'm outside starving. So that's I'm kind of in that you know where you're just counting. You're like, I think I saved enough for the next 3 months.
Wow.
But I do radio too for SiriusXM, MLB Network Radio. But it's still funny. Like, people get it. And I think as you and I are like getting into like adulthood,
yeah,
you kind of understand.
Just now at 43, yeah. I'm just starting adulthood. That's literally true.
And that's what I'd say. It's like, it's so weird. I'm not a major leaguer anymore.
Yeah.
I'm a broadcaster with children that go to school. And then I'm having to like figure out finances for 5 months, which is so strange. I'm so not good at it.
Do you have a guy?
Yeah, I mean, everybody has a guy.
Right.
But, yeah, I have a guy, and he's like, stop spending so much. Christmas is coming up.
It's funny because you mentioned the hibernating for the winter. Spilly's usually in good shape. He weighs about 290 pounds right now. He's literally, he's actually put all the chestnuts in for the winter. He's just like, he's got the winter coat. He's big.
Yeah, I'm feeling big.
He's feeling big. Well, I mean, I wanted to go, I often go in chronological order, but I find that interesting, the transition. So we can get to the, how did you start, like, where, tell me about high school ball.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
But let's start with this. This is the transition from being a player to now. It's been a few years now, but. Mm-hmm. How does that go? I've talked to other guys who've been kind of recently retired. I've also talked to, like, Bill Walton. So, I mean, he had old perspective. But, like, is it depressing when that happens? Is it what do I do now? How does your brain fire that way? It's like, oh, last year I was hitting 270 and now I'm not a player anymore.
Yeah, that's a good question. Some aspects of not playing ball anymore, I still dry swing in front of the mirror.
Do you?
And then my kids are like, why are you working on your baseball swing? And then I'll do a golf swing. I mean, we just find ourselves, and I'm sure there's so many retired guys that when you're done doing a sport, you still go through, I guess, the pantomiming, like the stuff that you used to do, right? Like catching a fly ball and throwing.
So many reps, like millions right. of reps. How do you stop?
And so I don't. Yeah. Like, I still find myself, like, working on my swing in the mirror or, like, pretending I'm Justin Turner or like, doing my Tulo swing or my Nolan yeah. Arenado swing. Like, I like, see these guys, and how I learn from broadcasting is, like, can I still do this stuff?
Hmm.
That's been my biggest transition is I miss the game. I miss the game a lot, but I'm also – I don't miss the grind of it.
Right.
Like, you hear guys talk. I don't miss the workouts in the off season. I was never a big workout guy. I did it because it was my job.
Yeah.
And then I wanted to outwork everybody. It was weird because I'm not like, as soon as I stopped playing baseball, it wasn't like I'm a workout nut. I'm not Gabe Kapler. I'm not one of these guys.
Oh, God. That's exactly the right example too.
Yeah, but I'm not in it, and it's not, Gabe's a very healthy guy. He's, you know, manager yeah, yeah. of the Phillies, but yeah. Like, there's part of it that's part vanity. There's part of it that's part functional.
Yeah.
I don't feel like I have to be functionally athletic to go to the supermarket or take my kids to school.
It's falling.
So, like, all that, all the stuff, like, the minutia of, like, getting yourself ready for a major league season.
Yeah.
Now that that's gone, that weight of preparing yourself.
Yeah.
It's like a nice release. Like that, I don't have to think about, all right, tomorrow I need to wake up at 7 a.m. I have to do my workout for 3 hours. I have to go stretching. Then I'm going to go hit. I know I got to pick up the kids at 3, but I really need to get these extra. Like when life and family and baseball and business and, all right, next year it's going to be my 30-year arbitration. Like what kind of numbers do I have to do? Who's the young guy coming up? I'm 31. You know, like
mm-hmm.
all those thoughts, which you shouldn't have in your head. You should be like, I'm really excited to play next year.
Yeah.
It's so much more. And once you kind of transition, that's gone, which is, it's a nice release. But as I said earlier, there's still aspects of it as a broadcaster. Can I do what I'm talking about? And I've actually thrown it out there a couple times because I played in winter ball for so many years. I played 5 years in Mexico.
Mm.
That I was really tempted to get myself in some sort of playing shape and play another month or 2 months of winter ball this year. I just wanted to because
this year
I was actually considering.
Wow, just, how old are you now?
I'm 38.
Okay.
I still think I could give you like one quality at bat. Okay. But the idea was because I talk about, you know, the mental stress of hitting and looking for pitch sequences, and then like as far as what am I doing on the bases, I wanted to kind of put myself back in the shoes again.
Yeah.
To see if what I was saying was actually true. Because we count so much of our recollection of what we did.
Yeah.
Do you really know, like, how you go about, when you were writing at 23 years old, how you went about your process? You can't remember it.
No. But you can go ask Tapia or Cargo, like, tell me what it's like. You could just ask the current players, too, and you're not that far removed that it would be weird anyway.
No, I know, but you also, I mean, part of when you're in our chair as an analyst, yeah. it's that... I'm not I don't want to regurgitate everything.
Sure.
Because then what's the point of me even being up there? Yeah. I have to relive my personal experience and kind of relate it.
Mm.
So that's what I was saying. I was like, it would be really fun to go back and go, all right, when I'm in the box, do I actually think about this? Do I think about twisting my back foot, standing up tall? Like,
you should do this.
I want to.
Or like some sort of really high level pro ball. Like, I mean, play with, what's his name? With
Andy LaRoche and the baseball stars, the Kansas City Stars.
You could do that. There's also like Matt Replinger's team, like that.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
The Denver Browns. The Browns. Who are pretty good.
Yeah.
I mean, he'd probably be the best player on the team, but still, like, I mean, there you could do that kind of stuff. It's out there.
I just want to do something where I think the pressure that I want to feel is the pressure of earning a paycheck.
Yeah.
Doing it every single day. And then knowing that at any point you could get released. Like, that's the pressures I want to feel.
Huh.
Instead of just knowing that I could show up on Sunday or Saturday, play with a group of guys, be the best guy on the field. Yeah. I want something to matter.
Yeah.
You know, I want the pressure of it mattering so that, because that gives me the best sense of what it feels like to be a professional baseball player. Because, I mean, for example, we just watched this what's his name? Pittsburgh Pirates shortstop that got arrested for DUI.
Yeah, Jung O-Gung. Yeah.
Jung O-Gung. He went and played in Dominican.
Yeah.
Good player. He just got released. He was like 11 for 83 with 100 strikeouts. Yeah. He got released. He's a major league player.
Yeah.
I want to feel that pressure. So that's what I'm saying. Like, if I was to go back and play winter ball, how quickly would they let me continue to play, and how quickly would I get released is kind of necessary for me to put myself exactly back in the shoes where I felt like I could give like proper analysis when I do the baseball game.
It sounds like the challenge of it too, just that was a big part of it. And Michael Jordan, you know, he left and then came back to the Wizards. It's like, I missed it. I missed feeling that feeling, missed being around teammates. People often cite sure. that too. Can you recapture any of that when you're in the box with Drew? You know, if somebody hits a walk-off and you really nail your analysis, I mean, or is it just you have to accept the fact that from now on you're going to have a job and you'll be good at it, but it's not going to be like, whoa, you know, the fired up thing. Like, is it over now?
Yeah, it's definitely over. I felt, you feel some emotion to the players because we spend so much time with them.
Yeah.
I also think that also needs to be noted, the difference between a national job when you're not, I guess, beating the path with the guys on a day-by-day basis, it becomes such a fine line in our line of work, because the people that listen to us, and that's a part of this whole broadcasting thing, still blows my mind. Vince Scully said it best. He was like, we are actual guests in people's homes every single night.
Yeah.
And talk to them like you were having family dinner with them. And I didn't realize that. I was like, whatever, Vin.
until the first time anybody's ever said those words.
Whatever, man. And I go and I meet somebody on the concourse. They're like, hey, do you know my wife, Margaret? And here's my son, Bobby and Jane. It's like, I've never met you in my whole life. Oh, that's right. Sorry. We watch you guys every single night. You're mm-hmm. part of it. And when you hear that, you go, oh man. And so just understanding that little part that people are paying attention to what you say also carries over to when you're doing the walk with the players, that you understand that the parents are watching and the wives and the girlfriends are watching. Mm-hmm. And it's not to new to ourselves from saying things that are critical. It gives us a better perspective that these are humans and that what we do say matters, and that we can't be off in a bubble somewhere else and just say these things without feeling any sort of remorse, because whatever you can't say, look, words hurt. If I say something about somebody that's negative, that's personal, it hurts. We're watching this day and age with social media. It's crazy.
Oh, yeah. Players know. They'll confront you. Price, Dennis Eckersley thing. Dennis freaking Eckersley. He's a Hall of Famer. Yeah. Price knows this, but he's pissed off because who are you to badmouth me?
And so when you go back, do I feel emotion when these guys win a walk-off? Yes, I feel emotion because we walk with these guys, ooh, and I want to paint these players. And I'm not painting as if it's something false, but we get to know them on such a intimate level.
Right.
That, of course, when Nolan does something or Charlie does something or someone does something great, you're like excited for them because yeah. we're friends with them and we're partners. And that part, like, yeah, I get excitement when a guy hits a walk-off, but it's not the same as if it was my actual teammate.
Well, I imagine if you're saying something negative, first of all, you want to avoid like ad hominem attacks. So if Nolan is in a 2-for-20, you wouldn't say, well, Nolan sucks now, which first of all isn't true because he's the best. And secondly, I would imagine the best approach is to look at it mechanically and say, he's 2 for 20. Either we just came off of a day game after a night game in St. Louis, or maybe the guys, which could be where you come in, is struggling mechanically. Nolan Swink, which you know very well, he's doing this. A lot of
moving parts.
Yeah, he's dropping his head, whatever. And then you can analyze it and not say what a bum he is, but you know what? If Nolan gets this hip turn, that's when it's going to start clicking and you'll see it. And then if he does, then you've been proven right. I would assume that's the way to go.
It's exactly right.
Yeah.
But you're still with the mob mentality. I mean, we just saw what happened in Tennessee with the mob mentality, with social media trying to get someone's head for a job. It's when people start getting like spilly, just he's 2 for 20. He sucks.
Yeah.
Just say he sucks. He sucks. Like that's the mob mentality. They're like, just be negative. Where you keep telling me about, for example, last year with the Rockies, it was Carlos Gonzalez.
Yeah.
Cargo. It was, he sucks. He sucks. He's old. His swing's terrible. He's brutal. He's not the same guy. And we're pointing out, like, no, there's some mechanical issues here.
Yeah.
Like, I'm picking up on him. Oh, is he finally coming out of his slump? You just admit it. I'm tired of hearing this argument. He sucks. Like, just let it go. And he was like, no, that's not true. Just watch. As soon as he gets the timing down, or, for example, it was a grip with his hand, you know, like... His hand was wrapped and he couldn't get the barrel to the ball. And we pointed that part out and I was like, that's such BS. You guys are just copping out with more and more mechanical stuff. He's 2 for his last 75, you know, like right. He sucks. He's over the hill. And then he gets the hand figured out and he starts sleeping better and eating better and whatever mental stuff the guy is going through too.
Yeah.
And he clicks and he's like, oh my God, this guy's so good right now. You're like, see? But there's only so much that you can do, because people in general, especially on a day-in, day-out basis, the guys that pay attention to this every single day, because baseball is different than other sports. It's a grind for the fans, too.
For sure.
And so when a fan's watching a week of terrible at-bats from one of their stars, they're like, just say he sucks. Just tell us he stinks. Like, just tell us that.
Yeah.
And we can't.
No. It's not really productive either. I have a whole bunch of playing day questions. Three of them came up, and I think two answers ago. So, first of all, you talked about the off season and working out, and how you would do it, but it wasn't sure. Like you weren't like a gym rat by any means. You played in the PED era, and I you've never been a big build. You're an athletic guy, but you're not a huge guy. Nope. Was that ever daunting to you? Obviously, you made the decisions that you made, but when you look and you see this other dude on your team or another team, and he goes from 190 to 225, and he's this and he's that. Did that weigh on you, or was it just like, oh, it doesn't matter, I'm a 300 hitter with an on-base profile anyway, and I'm never going to be that guy, so who cares?
It's a tricky question.
Sure.
And it's one I've answered many times.
Hey, by the way, I like Barry Bonds. I'm totally fine with steroids. I wouldn't say that I'm pro-steroids, because I understand that if you do it and you don't do it, I get the whole player thing and it becomes difficult, but I still think of the game as a fan, and Bonds was, well, I can swear, he was a cool motherfucker. Like, he was the best. So, whatever, but I'm not in the trenches. My paychecks don't depend on me beating out the next guy who might literally be juicing.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's a lot. It's a lot there. I want to get into Hall of Fame voting with you, because Jeff passed the other day.
I'm 80% through my article, and we're going to talk about that. So that is another way in.
Yes. Good. I want to get on
and
that.
Jeff and I are friends, and his column was very interesting.
Yeah. It's an interesting take. So let me go to my personal thing.
Mm-hmm.
I think at all levels, as an athlete, you're always looking for an edge. There's no doubt. Mm-hmm. I mean, when I was in college, there was creatine. I took creatine. When you get to the next level, even in pro ball, there's a period in where guys were going to GNC and taking this like red antler stuff that was supposed to mimic HGH.
Yeah.
Right. Like, so you hear about these things and you know guys are taking it, and even going as far as like watching. Not just steroids, and to me, steroids and amphetamines or greenies, Adderall, Ritalin, all these things kind of couple together as giving an edge.
Yes, so I agree with you.
So,
and everybody did amphetamines, the unleaded and leaded, and Joe Morgan's like, well, Pete Rose should be in the Hall of Fame. Okay, number one with the girl.
Oh,
number,
God.
Number two, horrible. That's already your disqualified. Number two, he bet on baseball, which you cannot do. And number three, he sucked down amphetamines like nobody's business. And so did Willie Mays, and so did a lot of other people. But Pete was known to be like, Greeny's up to his eyeballs. So anyway, continue.
Yeah, and Pete Rose, by the way, go to hell.
Yeah, right.
As soon as I found out about the statutory,
with there's no coming back from that. There's no debate.
I'm not shy about that either. No. As far as like amphetamines go, did I ever take a green? Of course, I took it in Mexico in winter ball.
Yeah.
I noticed the difference. Did I ever carry that over to the major leagues? No. For some reason, and I have no moral compass. I know I don't.
Yeah.
But there were certain aspects of competing against other people that I felt there were lines that I could not cross.
Mm-hmm.
One was taking steroids. I just physically couldn't do it.
Yeah.
Even when approached by people like, hey, do you want, you know, like I knew guys in college that were taking it. I was like, well, how do you do it?
And high school.
High school, I never met anybody.
Really?
I came from Santa Barbara. There was no, like, steroids.
Beautiful there.
Yeah.
I'm all okay.
Last time you saw a surfer dude take steroids. But, no, college, I mean, I knew some college guys that were taking it. And I was like, well, what do you have to do? And I was like, well, you inject it. I was like, I'm terrified of needles. I'm not doing it.
Yeah.
They were like, well, there's oral versions of it that cream you can take. Clear, yeah. And I'm like, I can't afford that. So I'm just going to work. I'll just work. And I was never in a position where I was hurt or that I looked at taking steroids as a monetary gain.
Yeah.
I never looked at it as I need to take this thing so I can make this X amount of money.
Yeah.
It was just, how am I competing on this playing surface? Am I par with everybody else? Am I still better than everybody? Yeah. Then I'll keep doing what I'm doing. Where it really started to bother me was when, you know, I'm not afraid to say the guy's name either. When I looked at my career path, my career path and Melky Cabrera's were identical.
Yeah.
And at the same time that he chose to take his PEDs, I did not.
Yeah.
So this was 2010.
Yeah.
So I was heading into my second year arbitration, which ended up being my last year.
And 2009 was your big year when you hit like 320, right?
I did okay. 2009 was my
year. As I said, I had the Stratomatic card. I had the Stratomatic card. There was one year when you were a beast.
There was one year I was good.
Like 415 on base or something.
Majority of the years I was average. Okay. But so I was going into my second year arbitration. I get plantar fasciitis. At the same time, this guy, Melky, was, look at our numbers, our career numbers from 2005 to 2010 were literally identical.
Huh.
He goes and takes whatever he took, ends up, we all remember, you know, the batting title that he won with the Giants, and then he gets disqualified, but he also helped the team win an all-star game, and home field advantage goes to them, whatever. But I ended up, during that time frame, I had plantar fasciitis, and had I taken a drug or lived on amphetamines or anything, like maybe I got an extra year.
Yeah.
Maybe I got an extra like opportunity to prove myself, because Melky ended up signing a 2-year contract with the Toronto Blue Jays.
Yeah.
He's already, you know, he was able to take advantage of cheating and the steroid abuse. And for me, it wasn't the numbers that the numbers that Melky could put up. He still had to do it on the playing field. It was the opportunity that he bought himself.
Yeah.
By using that. And for me, because I'd never had these huge bumps in my numbers, and because I played hurt, like maybe physically I would have been in a better situation for the next year to give me a little bit more time to get back to where I was. And so that part, and I've sat in front of high school and I said, you know, the worst part of, I don't think that steroid use or amphetamine use in major leagues has been properly, not vetted, but punished.
Hmm.
Because I get there's always going to be those guys that took something over the counter and they test positive and you're banned for a year. Like that's probably not fair. But I used to say to people in high school, I've never thought I'd ever say this, but I was like, at some point I regret not taking something because it had nothing to do with money. It was just, I wanted to go out on my own terms, not going out on an injury and then just not being good.
Right.
You know, like I would have loved to have had that extra year in the major leagues to prove my value like Melky got. Mm. Like I would have loved to have had that opportunity. And Melky's still playing.
Yeah. Making money.
Really. Making a lot more money. And so, look, that part to me, I wish I played 10 years in the big leagues. I played 5.5. Do I think if I cheated, I would have gotten to 10? Probably. Yeah.
Hmm.
And so that part makes you think like, damn, like maybe I should have. But then, you know, when I'm preaching to my kids, like, got to be able to look yourself in the mirror, this, that, and the other, like have a stance in life on it, you know, like have lines in the sand that you're not willing to cross and make sure you hold up to that. So if I'm saying like, hey, don't take steroids or don't cheat the game, like as long as you feel comfortable with what you're capable of doing, that'd be a blatant lie to my kids. And yeah. So at the end of the day, even if I made money, you still have to live with those decisions. And I'm happy that I didn't make those decisions. Mm-hmm. So I could look myself in the eye. But I mean, would I like to have my family in a much better financial position? Yeah. Would I have liked to play 10 years in the big leagues? Hell yeah. Hell yeah, I would have.
One, I think the guy who, for me, resonates the most with the PED stuff is FB Santangelo. And yeah. We saw him. We were in the booth, and I was hanging out with you guys, and he walked in. And everybody likes FB. He's a lovely guy. And the great story with him was the 94 season happens, come back to 95, and Kevin Malone, general manager of the Montreal Expos, is there. And he says, all right, there's a work stoppage. Who among you wants to play, you know, to be a scab? And FB says, there's no chance am I going to do that. I would never, ever do that. FB's been grinding in the minors for God knows how many years. I don't know how many years. And Felipe Alou, the manager of the Expos at the time, remembers this. And when the time comes, that they have when they get back to work and they have a call-up, they say, this guy, who's 5'10", and gets hit by a pitch a lot, like he's got this weird skill set, he's not a power hitter or whatever, but he's a grinder, I'm going to call you up. And FP also did steroids. And it's so honorable to not cross the picket line. It's one of the best things you could possibly do in any profession.
Oh, right.
To not deny people work, to be able to look yourself in the mirror. But the guy was also playing in Ottawa for, he's the greatest player in Ottawa Lynx history. That's sort of cool, but it's also kind of not cool if you're trying to be a big leaguer. And so this split where you're like, honor, 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 but man, if I could even make the big leagues once, you know, the people fixate on Bonds and Clemens and all that. Okay. You know, those guys would have been Hall of Famers with or Hall of Fame caliber players.
No doubt.
Without. But there's so many Santangelos out there. There's so many guys who would love to taste what it is to play under the lights at Yankee Stadium one goddamn time that, wow, that's got to be really tempting. And you were a good enough ball player and a hard enough worker that you could make it. And we're talking about a performance level issue as opposed to your literal survival in baseball. That's a tough one. I don't know how you get around it, especially if it's like 1995 and you're
in the pickup. Oh, man. Yeah. And I appreciate FP being
a very forthcoming. Very.
So, and I also, I've said this to many, many baseball players and all the times that I've sat and talked, sometimes you're just not good enough and you have to live with that.
Yeah.
As long as you're willing to understand that I busted my tail, I did this, certain opportunities weren't there. And it's a hard thing to tell somebody. Like I see guys come up to the big leagues all the time and they get a cup of coffee. And somebody will be like, man, what a bummer. We're not going to see that guy ever again.
Yeah.
And I go, it's not a bummer. Like, he made it. He's just not good enough.
Yeah.
Like, that's not a bad thing. It's not.
But all of you guys were the best player in your high school team, probably the best player in your college team, probably the best player at A ball. You know what I mean? Like, it's suddenly like, hit the wall. I'm no longer the best.
Yeah.
That's a tough pill, whatever profession you're in.
It is. It is. Yeah. But it's also necessary because that is the right path for how, I guess, like natural selection.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I guess in general, the way life works is you're either good enough or you find a way to survive or you're just not good enough. And I know that maybe it's a wet blanket in a bad statement. You're just not good enough, but it's plain and simple, black and white. There's a certain criteria to be a Major League Baseball player. There's a certain criteria to be a professional. There's a certain criteria to be a great executive, a leader, yeah, CEO. And if you don't have that, that's not your profession.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not a knock on you. You try to get to that spot. But if you just don't have the talent level to get there, you're not good enough. And then if you understand that and you go, well, now I'm going to cheat to get to that extra level.
Yeah.
Well, then that's where you should understand, like, okay, you're actually not good enough, but now you're good enough because you cheated.
Mm-hmm.
That should let you know that it's not the right decision. And I like that you point out, I made it to the big leagues. I knew I was good enough. But my only qualm for not taking steroids was that I didn't want to increase my performance because then I felt like I was cheating the group. And by not taking that, I cost myself other opportunities.
Yeah.
It wasn't like I needed it to become a professional baseball player, get me through to the next threshold. It was just, I'm saying that if I was to take a steroid, it was to keep me there longer.
Yeah.
And I think that's a pretty big distinction. And that's also why whenever I look at people in the PED era, do I understand it? Sure. Mm-hmm. When I look at a guy like Bonds and Ramirez and Clemens, do they need it? No. Mm. Do they do it to continue performance over a long period of time? Yes. So I understand their rationale for taking it.
Yeah.
Roger Clemens didn't take a steroid to become Roger Clemens. He was already Roger Clemens. He took a steroid to maintain himself as Roger Clemens. And so, I'm not saying that it's okay, but I understand the thought process for them, is that they're trying to grind out that career longer. It's why A-Rod did it. It's why Giambi did it. It's why all these other guys that have come forth talking about it, they didn't take it to become this thing. They took it to maintain themselves as whatever they've become.
Life insurance. Pain in the ass. Blech. It's awful. It is so difficult and complicated. It has been in the past anyway. I had to do it as a father of kids. What are you going to do? You got to make this stuff happen. You got to protect yourself, your future, your family's future, and all of that. But shopping for it is a pain in the butt. But Policy Genius makes it easy. Policy Genius is a multi-product digital insurance platform that helps people get the coverage they need and feel good about it by providing them with a user-friendly experience. It is actually easy to do. You don't need to shop a million places because Policy Genius does that for you. You don't need to spend a bazillion dollars because Policy Genius makes it more affordable. It is excellent. So you have to appreciate that. You have to also appreciate the fact that they get an A+ rating from the Better Business Bureau, featured and received praise from a whole bunch of different places, including the New York Times and Vox and Lifehacker, and Policy Genius is great. Big, big supporter of them. They're a supporter of this podcast, and you could check out all kinds of insurance, life, and others by going to policygenius.com and making that happen. Check out policygenius.com, and thanks to Policy Genius for sponsoring the podcast. So I guess I'm scooping myself because this podcast is probably going to come out tomorrow in my article on the Joe Morgan thing and the Hall of Fame in general, because I write a column where I say these are the guys I would vote for this year. We'll probably come out in a few days. My brief Morgan take is that, first of all, he's saying, well, we shouldn't let anybody in. I got news for you, buddy. There are guys in. I'm aware of who they are. Some of them are not people that people talk about, but I know all about it, and people in the game know all about it. And that's fine. Some of them did it to come back from an injury. Some of them did it for whatever reason, but they did it. There's several people. Pud Galvin in 1889 took a cocktail, which was a performance enhancer. It was made out of monkey testicles. Pud Galvin is in the Hall of Fame right now. Lots of guys did lots of things. You can look it up. Pud Galvin. So this has been going on for a while. So saying that, he's basically referring to two or three guys that he doesn't like for whatever reason, that's fine, but this is a naive thing to say. Also, the way that the Hall of Fame is voted on, I don't vote yet, but I will. You remember the Baseball Writers Association of America. He is talking down to the Baseball Writers Association of America. He says, you guys don't know, so I got to come in and be the moral arbiter, Joe Morgan. By the way, the greatest second baseman of all time.
Yes.
And tell you guys what to do. Yeah, that ain't going to work, buddy. That's going to backfire. Somebody else would be like, well, I never voted for Bonds, but 6 votes for Bonds this year. Screw you, Joe Morgan. So it just becomes this thing where, and Passan, Jeff Passan from Yahoo, gave up his vote. Jeff is one of the most intelligent baseball writers out there.
No.
He's a good guy, all that stuff, and he's just like, I'm out, and we need more Jeff Passans. And so this is not working. And furthermore, I have one of my very great friends works for the Hall of Fame. And so I have nothing against him, and the people work there are fine. But the general way that they're doing this, it feels like they're hiding a little bit behind, like Morgan is flying the flag and they're not declaring things. We asked the BBWA, we said, make it from 10 players to 12 players on the ballot. They said no. Okay, fine. I didn't love it, but that's fine. Then we said, hey, let's have every vote be public so we could at least be able to scrutinize people. And they said no to that too. And it's our guys, it's our BBWA guys who are voting, and gals. Why would you say no? So it feels like there's like a weird,
I love the place. If you've ever been.
Oh, yeah.
The museum is incredible. I just went for the induction ceremony this year. My guy Tim Raines made it. Super great. All that's great. But the politics behind it are crazy. Crazy. So tell me where you came down on it when you heard about it. You mentioned Jeff. I don't know if you had a thought on that. What did? How does that in relation to your general policy on PEDs?
Man, the PEDs, like, I had this conversation with some guys, and I said this on national radio, because I do MLB Network Radio 3 days a week.
Yep.
And it came down to, before Joe Morgan even wrote this letter, I was like, I literally had dinner with a bunch of sports writers, and around a table, I asked, I was like, are you guys voting for Bonds and Clemens? Yeah. And they all said yes. And I go, what?
How Why? Old are they? My age or younger? Probably, yeah, right.
There and I go, why? And they go, well, I was like, was it because of Piazza and Pudge and Bagwell and Biggio? And they're like, no, not really. I was like, that is part of it to do with their thought process. And I go, all right, then what was it? He's like, well, I guess once Bud Seeley got inducted into the Hall of Fame, when he's supposed to be the leader, he was the commissioner at the time, and he basically, you know, he had a Hall of Fame career. You can say what you want about him as an executive with the Milwaukee Brewers. He's a fantastic executive with the Brewery, mm-hmm. by the way. And then as commissioner, you could say, all right, well, he allowed the game to do what it did and kind of, you know, held a blind eye to it. And so he gets into the Major League Baseball Hall of Fame riding the backs of steroid abusers.
Yeah.
So that door's open now. That door is wide open, not because of Pudge and Piazza, who all had the speculation behind them, but because if we're going to say that Bud Selig is deserving to be a Hall of Fame executive and in the Hall of Fame, and he, you know, he didn't base his career just solely on the PED era, but it was under his watch. And I've always said the same analogy. I go, if I'm driving your kids in a van, and in the back seat of the van, one kid punches the other and it happens and they get hurt. Who's responsible? Me, the driver. Even if I'm driving looking forward and my hands are tied, I can't get all the way to the back seat to stop the fight. It's still in my van. And so I would suffer because of that.
Yeah.
And that is how some of the sports writers were viewing Bud going in the hall, speculation from the other guys. Roger and Barry had never tested positive, quote unquote, for a PED.
Yeah.
They were in the Mitchell report. You know, like, where are they supposed to be? The judge, the juror, the executioner? That these guys are just saying, like, I've had enough. If these guys are in, these guys are coming in right behind it.
There are also no instructions, by the way. And the voting instructions just says there's a character clause. We're left to just float in the wind and do whatever we want to do. It's supposed to be subjective because it creates debate. That's the point.
So, and that's the beauty. Look, I would love it, to be honest, I would love it if Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens had a press conference. They could have it in front of their house with one camera.
Yeah.
And the question, it's a simple question. Did you or did you not use any sort of steroid during your career, in the off season, injectable, given to you? Yes or no? That's it. Mm-hmm. Yes or no? If it's yes, see ya. That's it. You're done. No? Okay. I'm voting you for the Hall of Fame. Hmm. But the fact that they haven't said anything also, you know, for most people, they're like, well, it's proven guilt because they're not saying anything. Why hasn't Bond said something? Why hasn't Clemens? If you never took anything, wouldn't you go to the mountaintops and scream, I'm clean, you guys?
Right.
But they haven't. That's fine. I don't care. I think at the end of the day, when I look at this Bonds and Clemens, I know they're getting in. Joe Morgan wrote that because he knows they're getting in.
They will.
They're at 55% right now. It's either this year or next year. And if it's next year, I don't know how I view the Hall of Fame the same way.
Hmm.
And that's why I think Passan probably feels the same way I do is like, I don't want to be part of this right now. Like, mm-hmm. I just don't want to be a part of it. I don't want to be a voter when it comes down to Bonds and Clemens. Cause if they get in and they're known steroid users and they, you know, they basically sit. And by the way, for Bonds and Clemens, they have two opportunities, right? They either not say anything and get into the Hall of Fame, or they say something and either solidify their position into the Hall of Fame or they don't. So if I'm Clemens or Bonds, why would I say anything anyways? You're going to vote me in.
Yeah.
If I don't say anything. I'm in a Passan's group where if I had a vote, even though I feel like Clemens and Bonds are deserving Hall of Fame careers, I don't want to be the guy that speculates and says, well, I know that they did start. I don't.
Yeah.
I don't know that they did it. And
there was no joint drug prevention program until 2006.
Right.
So, like, Manny and A-Rod, you can make a different case for them than Bonds and Clements. They mm-hmm. failed drug tests.
Mm-hmm.
I am probably voting everybody in, but if you're going to draw a line, Manny and A-Rod, that's sure. the line.
Yeah, that's the line.
That's the line.
That's...
This is a proper regime. Here are all the rules. I mean, it was the Wild West before. Yes, of course, everybody knew you weren't supposed to do steroids. But what's this and what's that? You could sort of feign ignorance and everybody went along with it and it's fine. Manny and A-Rod's like, hey, dummy, don't do this. We're going to do it anyway. Cool, you're out. I mean, that's a different
story. I agree.
Nelson Cruz, Rocky Cabrera, whatever.
Yes, yeah. Yes, they're never getting in the Hall of Fame. But going back to Bonds and Clemens yeah. is... I think because of everybody outside of baseball looks at these two guys as like the main steroid users,
yeah.
That if you vote them in, the beautiful Cooperstown of name is not the same, and that's going to be the mob mentality that we're gonna see, and that's why I think when Joe Morgan wrote this letter, and I don't praise him for it, I don't commend him for it, but I also don't mind it.
Mm.
I don't mind it at all. I mean, it's not the pot calling the kettle black, but it's hypocritical, but it's also, he's basically saying, look, we're about to lose sanctity of the Hall of Fame if you add these guys in. And, yeah. I agree. I think he's right. The way people will view the Hall of Fame completely changes if Bonds and Clemens get in, right or wrong, or indifferent, however you feel about it. The view of Cooperstown changes completely if you add those two guys in.
Split the place into two because the museum is rad. Plaque room's cool, but the museum is the best stuff. That there's like a life-size picture of the Philly Fanatic and the San Diego Chicken, and there's like a Fernando Valenzuela cereal box from 1980, and holy crap, that's a Ralph Kiner thing, and wow, there's a whole thing on Jackie and Hank Aaron. Like, the museum is so great, and so is the Negro Leagues Museum in Kansas City, by the way. I love the baseball history. It feels like we're talking about two different things, but it all gets confused. I mean, I know why it gets confused. I get it. So this was something that I was going to ask you separately, but I'll just crib it off of my own podcast and stick to my story. I had told you that I was writing a story about minor league unions or an attempt to unionize. I, as you probably gathered, by the way, I was talking about FP and scabs. I feel very strongly about this. I'm a pro-union guy in America, in sports, and whatever. If you don't have rights, management is going to trample on you. Ugh. That is how it works.
Mm-hmm.
And if I become a zillionaire one day, which is unlikely, but if I did, I'm not going to go to the other side and say, well, I don't care. I'm the plutocrat now. I will always think this way. So, you got six guys living in a two-bedroom apartment. You're living on bologna and cereal. You are struggling. It is a very hard thing to do. And if you're not a bonus baby and you got a $1,000 signing bonus or something like that, and maybe you have no hope, it is very, very difficult. Now, there is a line of thought that goes, you signed up for this. You knew what you were getting. You knew that there were a bazillion people trying to get that one job for the San Diego Padres, and you knew it, and you decided to go into it. Tough luck for you. Six in a two-bedroom apartment. You're going to make $650 a month. You're going to do this. You're going to have to, and you have a girlfriend. God knows how you're going to do it. That's your own problem. But the other school of thought is that you are working for a living and providing a service. At the very, very least, you have to make minimum wage because you are a worker, at the very least, and some kind of living conditions. And the difficulty to create a minor league union, these are two separate forms of players. The incentives are totally different for big leaguers. Tony Clark seems like he might know what he's doing. He seems like a smart guy and all that stuff. But what incentive does he have for the guy in Great Falls? Because that guy has nothing to do with the guy who's on the Yankees, except that Great Falls guy has a slim chance of maybe being the guy on the Yankees. These are complicated issues. So I'm looking at it from a moral point of view, and I'm saying, we got to figure out a way to do right by these guys. And everybody else is saying, how are you going to do that? And I've talked to Garrett Brocious, who's kind of the leader of this movement. And he's an attorney. He's not somebody who's going to start a union. There's sort of no good way here. So how can we get from the moral side to the practical side and make something happen so that people don't have to suffer as their personal religion?
Yeah, that's such a good question. I remember in the minor leagues, because I was part of the players' union negotiating committee, and I was a players' rep for every single year I was in the big league. So
I didn't know that. Cool.
I'm definitely a union guy. I'll always be a union guy. That's why whenever I go to New York in the broadcasting booth, I never touch a power strip because the New York union TV guys will kill you for it. It's completely different. It's a strange set of rules for minor league baseball. And even if you were to say, all right, league minimum or, average how many hours can you work? Like, do you consider traveling on a bus work?
Yes.
So do I.
Yeah.
So when I started looking at, okay, if I'm looking at what a work week is for a minor league player, how many hours can I calculate? And if I calculate it, I'm guessing 100 hours. And if that's the actual number, maybe it's less, maybe it's more. Isn't it under like constitutional law that you're not allowed to work that many hours? So what happens to the whole minor league system? It comes down to 3 games a week, 4 games a week. Well, part of the grind of minor league baseball is that you need to do it every day. I do believe that there should be there has to be a better wage earning system. Mm-hmm. And beyond that, and I've said this to owners and I've said this to executives, I go, hey, everybody has this fantastic spring training facility. Mm-hmm. Everybody does. Make sure this is year round. House the guys in the offseason, let them work out, because mm-hmm. one of the biggest problems that we have as players is when we get into the off season, I can only train as good as my money allows me. Mm-hmm. Now I'm totally screwed if I don't have money, because not only that, I'm having to take a part-time job, which I did. I was a bank teller and a restaurant worker. I was one of the worst workers of all time.
What restaurant was it?
There was one here in Colorado called the Village Tavern. It was a steak restaurant. And then I worked at a place called Los Arroyos in Santa Barbara, Mexican food restaurant. But I was a waiter. I would get up early. I'd work out in the mornings. Sometimes I'd pull doubles, and then I'd go hit at night.
Wow.
Just to pay for training.
Guys used to do, like, coal mining and stuff in 1910. Yeah. Like, they were, like, star players would do that. Yeah.
I just don't know what the happy medium is. I do think Major League Baseball, and they have rules, too, where you're not allowed to have the players for this amount of time. So even by saying, like, hey, just put all the kids in your home training facility in Arizona and let them work out and house them in dorms or whatever.
Yeah.
They're like, we can't have them because of the rules have to change. So, right. I mean, you're right. It's a lot of red tape that you have to cut through. I just think that there has to be a better system because it's not fair. I do like the survival of the fittest. And I don't want to take that mentality away, but it's the same as in college. You go to college and you're in a classroom, you know, you go to Chem 1, there's 100 kids in Chem 1 and only 20% of them are going to get an A, the bell curve. Well, there's incentive to be the top 20% and you work your ass off to get to it. And there's a natural progression, even in college. And all the college students are put in the same confines with the same kind of living situations that are fair and equal. And it's the ones that grind the hardest that end up being at the top of the bell curve. If you can get a minor league system where it's like that and it's known, then I have no problem with it. But when you have 8 guys living in a place, or you have a Dominican-born player that's, you know, it's not making anything. Yeah. And
he doesn't have any money to fall back on. He doesn't think we're up in a middle-class family. None of that.
So there's got to be a better system. There has to be, because it's not criminal. I wouldn't say it's criminal. But it's definitely, it's not a healthy environment, and that healthy environment leads to a lot more negative off-field behaviors. That's why you see guys having problems with alcohol and some sort of abuse.
Talking about PED use, by the way, minor leagues is rampant, because like survival of the fittest, it doesn't get any harsher than you're in Great Falls, you're 19, you're from the Dominican, you have no family, you don't speak the language, you're not making any money, you're living in an apartment. What are you going to do, you know? I'm not saying it's the right decision, but I'm saying, you know.
But that,
or from Iowa.
But it doesn't matter where you're from. Yeah. But, I mean, I think whenever I look at minor league baseball and I look at Latin American players, and it's why as a union member, when it was first brought up to us as far as an international draft, we said, whoa, no way. Why would we do an international draft? It's not that we want to limit these players because we feel like it's not fair. Like if you look at a Cuban board player, that typically is unfair where they're signing free agent contracts, but also look at where these guys are coming from.
Yeah.
What fallback do they have if we put an international player in a draft?
Yep.
Were they going to college?
All drafts are immoral. That's my position. All drafts are immoral. All of them. Every sport, every draft is immoral. Everybody should be free agent. Just like if you're a dentist,
I love
a
dentist that.
Or whatever. No drafts. Out. No NFL draft. No more going to Madison Square Garden. We're out. We're done. You're the offensive lineman for whatever? Cool. Any team I want to go to. That's a problem for you, Indianapolis Colts? Because, well, tough luck. Then there's no more Indianapolis Colts. Drafts are designed to enrich teams and their owners. It has no bearing on labor whatsoever. It is a way to slot labor in a place where they have as little bargaining as possible. This Shohei Ohtani thing? That's some bullshit, man.
Oh, yeah.
He should be making $1 trillion. I don't even have the word for it. And, oh, he's going to get the international. He's going to get the signing bonus of $3 million. Come on, man.
He's the best bonus in baseball by far. I mean, the best bargain in baseball. I've actually laughed about that. I go, hey, wait, let's talk about Ohtani for a second. Because Ohtani ones make – it really does make me laugh. If he waits 2 years, he goes under the free agent rules and he can make his –
$200 million.
Billion dollars.
Yeah.
But under – under the current rules, as an international sign, the max he can get is 3.6, and I believe the Rangers have that, or the Twins have that.
Yeah, Rangers. Yeah.
And it's a minor league contract. So here's the part that I love about it is if I'm an owner, or if I'm in the 30 ball clubs, every single one should make the bid for the $20 million, and then just say like, I would love to have you on our team. This is why. Just do whatever. The whole song and dance. You get that guy in your system. You have him as a minor league with three options. You can send him down. You can even hold him back like Chris Bryant or Mike Trout for the first part. If you want to extend him, hold him out for an extra 7 years. And someone will go, well, that's not fair. I was like, why? I'm helping him assimilate to professional baseball. You have a built-in reasoning for everything.
Yeah.
It's the best bargain in baseball. I don't want him to come here. I don't. I've actually said, I was like, please don't come. Don't come this year. Come in 2 years and just own everything.
He just wants to challenge himself. I mean, I guess it's admirable in a way on his part.
It isn't. I mean, it is. It's admirable because I want to see him. I want to see a two-way player as a 23-year-old Japanese player.
They project him as the
and I played against him. I played against
him. Did you?
Yeah, I played against him in Japan. I saw him come from – he was hitting six. He's 19 and had a swing – similar to John Olerud, and it's not John.
That's pretty good.
Hold on. It's because of his mannerisms. His bat on his shoulder, and he was quiet, swung inside out. And then I would watch him. He'd play right field, hit six, decent hitter at 19 in professional baseball.
Yeah, right.
And then the manager would walk out to the mound and point to the right fielder, which is where Ohtani played, and then the whole Japanese crowd would sing this Ohtani song, and he'd just come trotting in, throw 100, run right back out to the right field. It was awesome, and I was like, I want to see that in the major leagues. I want to see that. But I don't want to see it to where he's going to get taken advantage of. That's all this is.
Yeah.
He's going to be taken advantage of more than any player that we've probably ever witnessed in our time frame.
Yeah. The projections, by the way, the fancy stats, they project him in year one in the big leagues, his pitching stats will look like Jacob deGrom. Okay, that's pretty good. That's a borderline Cy Young guy. And his hitting stats are Evan Gattis, meaning low on base but big time power, better than average hitter. That's pretty good.
Take that.
That's pretty good.
And you got, and you only have to pay him league minimum.
He's 23. He's probably gonna get better.
And you just have to pay him league minimum. You have three options. You can send him down in the minors as many times as you want.
What a freaking cartel Major League Baseball is. Anyway, so back, one more question on the minor league union stuff, and I got a couple more, and then we'll cut it out. Who takes up the mantle? If you want to create change, does it have to be Bryce Harper when he's in the minors? Does it have to be a Santangelo type who's in the minors forever? And does it have to be... Can it be Tony Clark and just say, all right, it doesn't matter. We're just going to, out of the goodness of our hearts, we're going to do it. Who does this? That's sort of what I've run into. I've talked to Brocious about this a little bit. I've got a couple other interviews lined up. This is a story that I'm going to be working on for a while because I really, really care about this. Like more than, I don't care the guy's hitting 280. This is when the social issues and the life issues start crossing over. That's what I care about. So who's the catalyst who gets behind this?
That's. I think it has to come from Major League Baseball.
Yeah.
I think it has to be somebody waving that banner first.
Can't rely on the owners or the commissioner, so you got to go to the union.
I mean, I would love to see it be a face of the game. I'd love somebody in a role like, let's say it's Giancarlo Stanton, just because he's the highest paid player.
Sure, yeah.
And he goes, I want to make sure that we start taking care of minor league players, and I'm going to help fund this cause to create a union for minor league players, and I'm going to wave this banner. And then some of the minor league players start falling in line with them. And then you'll basically have a movement with them. I do. I think it has to be a player, a current player. I always feel like it has to be a current player. I mean, Kurt Flood was a current player that something happened bad to him. I'd like to see somebody in a position as an athlete with a voice, with power. Because, I mean, that's where you see them. It's easy to react. It's easy to be a former player and go like, oh, look at the social injustice. Yeah. It's better to be in the position where I'm an actual player on the field with a voice that is being heard, with a salary and this and that and the other. Because the minor league people just feel like, get to the big leagues and then talk.
Yeah.
It would have to come from a group of players that pick up the banner and then offer to use their... And that's why I think whenever you look at certain athletes throughout, whether it's NBA, NFL, I mean, what J.J. Watt was able to accomplish, or even looking at somebody, I believe it was Chris Long, that was giving all of his salary towards a cause. Mm-hmm. If you have players that are willing to stand in front of the group and take whatever comes from that, whatever politics come from it, and then not only take on the cause, but put their money where their mouth is. I'm willing to fund this thing. I'm willing to pay for the best lawyer. I'm willing to help create. I'm willing to give salary for this. That's when people go, oh, crap. Like, this is for real. This guy actually believes in it. I'd like to see that. I think that's probably one of the best ways to get it done.
Yeah, a player who stands up for what he believes in, and it's going to affect positive change. And it'll definitely go positively because people will react positively, like Colin Kaepernick. Oh, no, sorry, that doesn't always go that way, it turns out. I want to get a story or two from you before we go. And you played the Mexican Leagues for five years. I'm going to guess there's at least one good story from playing in the Mexican Leagues for 5 years. Your bus got stuck in the middle of the road and a gang descended on you or whatever it is. Oh, man,
there's some bad ones. There's good ones, there's bad ones.
One of each.
So one of my favorites, and I told you I took amphetamines down in Mexico. The first time I did it was, it probably had to have been like 2005. I was a young player, 25 years old. I don't know any better. And I'm down there, and in my shoe, like, we would have a little clubby, and this guy's name was Chapo. Chapo is Mexican slang for short. Yes. I'm like, of course he's short. Like El Chapo. like the major drug cartel guy. Yeah. So Chapo, he cleans your shoes, and inside my shoe, I'm like getting ready to put my cleat on, and this little green pill pops out of it. I was like, what is that thing? And I look at Chapo, and I go, cause he's like waiting around the corner for me to see it. And I go, Chapo, what is this? He's like, you eat it. All right, ate it. And you know, like second inning, my heart's going to explode.
Is it like 10 coffees?
Oh my God. I don't even know however many coffees it was, but it wasn't.
Colorado's finest is the extent of my drug use. Like, I haven't really
done this thing was the equivalent. Like, I thought I was going to die. And so I come in the second inning, I'm sweating. Mm. And Chapo's waiting at the end of the dugout. He's like, Spilly, Spilly, Spilly. And he called me Spill Mierda, which means, like, spill shit. So I'm 25 years old. He waves me over. And he's like, está bien? I was like, no, too fast. And he goes, okay. So he pours me a shot of tequila.
He's
like, here you go.
Up or down, right?
Bam. So I took a shot of tequila. I was like, okay. He's like, está bien? I was like, okay. So then go hit. And then I went and hit, and I was terrible. I was like, it was too fast. I can't go that fast. But that was my first experience with a greenie was in Mexico with Chapo putting greenies in my shoes. And it was hilarious. He ended up drinking more tequila than you ever do, like, at night at a bar just to play the baseball game. You have to find, like, that balance.
Well, and I've talked to guys, like, going back, like Bill Spaceman Lee and guys like that who uppers, downers, and you look for a cocktail at that point. I don't even know how you...
It's the fourth inning. It's 4-1, and you're taking a shot of tequila in the clubhouse, you know? So it's like... It's not a good, it was not a good experience, but it's one that I had. And so I can always share that with people and go, I know what it feels like to have taken an upper for a baseball game. I never did it at the professional level, never did it at the major league level, but I did it in winter ball and what feels like a safe environment. The other one was my last year in Mexico, I suffered a hernia, which was awful. Mm. And you talk about like wanting to get out of Dodge fast. So you're like, I got a bulge on my groin area. What is that? There's like a hernia. I was like, well, what do I do? I want to keep playing. Cause you can play with a hernia.
Yeah.
And they go, well, if it gets, if it gets worse, surgery here in Mexico. And I was like, all right, see it, clowns, I'm out. But during that time frame, it was like 2011. Yeah, it was 2011. It was like the drug trafficking and the drug wars were getting really bad. Yeah, yeah. And so we traveled to this place called Guasave. And Guasave was known as like this really bad drug cartel area because it bordered the two drug cartels. Mm. And they told all the players, they go, don't get out of your hotel rooms.
Right.
Like, you can't leave. And I'm like, fuck that. I'm going to get out of my hotel rooms, right?
Yeah, great, whatever.
So they would sell beers outside of the hotel in the back of like a car. And so in the back of a car, so you didn't have to go to the gas station,
sure, or
whatever, because they really didn't want the players traveling. So guys would sell out the back of their car, like 30 packs of beer, and then they'd have all the ice in the back, and they'd crack open the box of beer, and they'd pour in ice in the back. And so we found out like a day later, while we were traveling into Guasave, and it was a horrible story, there was 3 bodies hanging.
Oh my God.
Welcome to Guasave.
Oh my God.
Skinned, and around the corner, there was 4 more bodies in a white van beheaded. Like, you can look that thing up.
God.
And we drove right under that thing and we were asleep. Like, we didn't see it. So when they were telling us, like, hey, don't go out at night, I was like, oh, whatever.
Yeah. Wow. Wow. All right. 2 more. One is the camaraderie that everybody talks about with all that. I played some basketball. Sure. Never at high level, whatever. I don't know. What do people mean when they say that? Is it just the screwing around in the dugout and like cracking on a guy when you're watching? Is it the road? Is it the plane? Is it, what is it? Why do people say this? Other than you're just with these guys so much, just by law of averages, but you're with a lot of people in an accounting, sure, firm too, but it's, the people are like, wow, I really miss working at the accounting firm. Such camaraderie. Nobody says that.
I think what it boils down to is you're looking at, there's been 19,437 major league players.
It's really not a lot.
It's not a lot. Fill up the Pepsi Center for a Katy Perry concert.
Yeah.
And because it's less than 1%, and even when you go of all, you know, professional baseball players, what percentage of guys, I think it's about 20% of professional baseball players actually make it to the major leagues.
Mm-hmm.
To get to that spot is really difficult.
Yeah.
And everybody has had a certain grind, and everybody comes from a different location geographically. And every path is different, that you're kind of bonded by that. I always say, and I love sweat equity, the idea of if you and I were to go on a hike together, right now, superficial friends, you have coffee together, you see each other at the workplace, it's nice, right? Like, we're totally friendly. We go on a hike together, a grind together, something that, you know, takes effort, and I see you do it and you see me do it.
Mm.
We're bound together and we'll open up and we'll share stories that we would never ever share. And so to picture it that way. I mean, when you talk about camaraderie, it's these guys have gone through something that most people never go through. Like, it's a dream that had started as a kid and then it maintained as a dream as you went through college or high school. And then you fought through it in the minor league level. And then you get to a professional level and hopefully you're successful. And you automatically, just by being in that room, you realize what it took to get there. And then as you continue to watch people push themselves and grind and grow in their families, and you spend more time with them than you do your families, like, that's where it even comes closer. That's how these guys galvanize it. And I think when you understand that part of the journey of why you're part of a fraternity, it's because it's so small.
Mm.
That's because it took so much effort to get there that, like, what up, bro? Like, if I saw you on the top of a mountain knowing that you just won 14, it was like, dude, cheers. Like, I'll cheers you at the top no matter what. And that's the same thing with baseball.
So when you're, like, somebody like Corey Sullivan, you're going to be friends with him when you're 85. Like,
yeah, for sure. Yeah.
That's something like you currently work
together as well. But, yeah, but of course, because there's, yeah, it's, like, we went through something together. We were teammates. We saw each other fail. We saw each other succeed.
Your kids grew up.
Kids grow up together.
Stuff, yeah.
And there's something different. I mean, how many times do you actually cheer for your coworkers? You know,
right? Like, never.
Never
jump at the TPS report. Way to go.
Never do.
Yeah.
And how many times do you ever celebrate with your coworkers? Like, we did it. We got the TPS report in. Baseball and all professional sports, I think that going full circle all the way back on you know, as a baseball player, once you leave the game, like, what do you miss? Do you miss a fraternity? I miss that I'll never get a chance to win the one thing that you can't win, right? Like, the World Series and that opportunity to win only happens in Major League Baseball.
Yeah.
And when you walk away from that, I can't go win. And, you know, like, I can't win something that's recognized universally and that you realize it took so much effort and sacrifice to win. Like, that's gone. I'll never get a chance to win to that level. And I think when you talk about guys leaving the game, like, the quest and the camaraderie to try to win that one thing that is impossible to get, literally impossible, having that opportunity taken from you is kind of sad. You know, dang, I'll never get a chance to actually win.
All right, well, we'll try to come up on a higher note than that, which is the last question which I have at the end of every podcast, which is a life tip, a nugget of wisdom, something that you can relay to people. And I've had really, really serious ones. Maybe my favorite one, which I've mentioned many times, is Trey Kirby, who he's on a show called The Starters, a great NBA show. And he says, as soon as you get to the airport, your vacation has begun, go have 42 Cinnabons. It doesn't matter. You're on vacation. It completely makes no difference. I've had somebody talk about the way that he ties his shoes changed his life. I've had anything. So you are obviously a thoughtful and intelligent guy. You're obviously somebody who can roll with funny stuff. You crack on me when I go to the ballpark, rightfully so. Yeah, anything that is very spilly, I meet you, and this is like quintessentially you. It could be a way that you bust on your friends, or a way that something that's super serious, or a way that you raise your kids, whatever you want.
Yeah, I've lived by this. There's a couple things, like on baseball bats, I used to write, live your dreams. I meant that too. Mm-hmm. Like, just try to live your dreams. Whatever that dream is, like, live it. Then I met Vin Scully, and Vin and I sat together, and I used to always sit with him in the clubhouse in his press box, in the booth before every single game, which was super cool to go and spend time with him. And he'd go over his notes, and he's left-handed, and he'd write it, and it's always really hot in the booth. And him and I, we finally got a chance to, like, sit and talk, and I was like, Vin, can you help me? Like, what do I need to know to become a great broadcaster? And he goes, you know, Ryan, like, Red Barber, he brought me in and he gave me this opportunity to call this baseball game at a Boston Red Sox, at the Boston Reds at Fenway Park. And I thought it was going to be in the press box, and it wasn't. It was on the roof of Fenway Park, and it was for this night game, and it was freezing cold. It was a fall, you know, it was a crisp fall, and I didn't have a jacket, and I thought my broadcasting career was over before it started. And the next day he goes and he sees Red after getting that opportunity, and Red says to him, he's like, how do you think you did? And he's like, I'm terrible. He's like, you did great.
Oh.
And he goes, well, what? Why? He's like, well, I know you were up on top of the press box and it was freezing cold and you didn't have a jacket. And Vin was like, yeah, how'd you know that? He was like, well, somebody told me. He's like, the beauty of what you did was that you never told anybody during the broadcast that you were cold without a jacket. Nobody knew it. Mm-hmm. And so Vin was like, wow. So basically Red, after that, said, I'm going to take you on to be partner with me for the Brooklyn Dodgers. Hmm. And Vin goes, wow. He's like, so the best piece of advice that I can give you, Vin, is like, you know what you have that nobody else has? He's like, no. He's like, you, yourself. Like, there's no other Vin. Like, and so he told me the same story, and I loved it. And so, like, you know, the one thing that people have that nobody else has is yourself. And so, like, I've tried to live up to just being me. And then my final one, which is so true in life, is try everything twice.
Oh!
I'm a big proponent of trying everything twice.
Yeah, because if you go skiing for the first time and you wipe out, you're like, well, I'm not going to break my ankle. I'm done with it.
Yeah.
That's really interesting. I've definitely tried. I think I've only been proper horseback riding once. And I was like 12. I was terrified. I'm like, I'm never getting back. Literally, getting back on the horse, I'm out. I'm not getting back on the horse.
No, try everything twice. I live by that.
I like that a lot.
Yeah.
That's good. And also, I don't know that I'll ever get Vin Scully on the podcast. You've more or less stolen Vin Scully's life wisdom. I've now had Vin Scully on the podcast.
Yeah, there you go. I miss that orange guy. He was so great.
I like the bit that he did during the World Series. It was cool. Yeah. Spilly, you're a delight. And we had talked about doing this probably since like the Eisenhower administration.
Yeah.
I'm glad we finally got to do it. And I will go on a hike with you because you seem like the kind of guy that I would want to know, and I want to be in the trenches with you, and I will never, ever. I played 1 year of Little League. That'll not happen. So we'll see what we can do. Thank you so much for your time.
You got it, John.